we could not talk about Guardians on this station today without talking about what happened on another show today. And, you know, I innocently responded to a video that was put out there of Ken Carmen saying that that Jose Ramirez is on track to be a cautionary tale around baseball. And then I was alerted that Ken maybe in the 7 o'clock hour went back to maybe touch up his comments because he felt like he had been taken out of context. So we are going to play the bit of sound from the first segment in today's show. We're just going to start here where Ken warns about the cautionary tale angle.
Jose Ramirez will turn into a cautionary tale. Probably already is to some of these agents. He will turn into a cautionary tale for the rest of the league. Player of the generation. He is our Hall of Famer. He'll go in as a Guardian, and we'll always love him because he took this huge discount. That what do they do with all the rest of the money? What do they do with it? See, we're doing the same thing we always do. It's the same conversation all over again. And so his career ends, and we're all like, eh, you know, he's not having the same type of season he's had. Like, I heard Nick yesterday, Jose's kind of having a mid-season. Still has a 20-game hitting streak. No offense to Nick. I know that he's pressing a little bit because some of the other ones, he still has a 20-game hit streak. So now we're going to you-know-what away what we have with the player of our generation. And it just feels like, okay, great. And we're going to put Jose Ramirez up there, and we're going to put Nolan Jones in the two-hole every now and then. That's what we're going to do. Thanks for staying. Thanks for taking this massive discount. Here's your Nolan Jones that Jonathan makes an argument about exit velo.
I knew you had to kind of. I'm glad you got to speak your piece on the exit velo thing earlier.
You see why? Every time, it's like every Guardians convo, Nolan Jones comes up and it sounds like I'm like a defender of his. He was hitting under 200 when I made the point.
Also, you said it like 4 weeks ago. Is that fair?
It was not long ago. Like he'd already.
Well, I actually mean it was sucked. Well, but my point is, like, you said it early enough in the season that kind of thing is something you can talk about when you have a small sample size. A month later, we're through 2 months of the season. At some point, like, he's got to start hitting or not.
Well, but I think it would have been different if I had like done the Nolan Jones thing before the season. Was like, he's going to turn it around. This is it. Not really the case, but not the point.
So you and I listened to Ken's first segment. Did you think Ken was making a grander point about baseball instead of the Cleveland Guardians specifically failing Jose Ramirez?
So my big takeaway was the idea that we see this in baseball all the time where you have people that don't win the World Series. Like, is it just saying World Series or it was a complete failure of a career? Is that what we're going off of?
I think that's a very, and I think stylizing it specifically to the Guardians.
First off, and he did play in Game 7 of the World Series in what some are calling the biggest game in baseball history because it involved the Cubs and them breaking the curse. But it's Game 7 of the World Series. It doesn't get much bigger than that. We've had, in baseball history, we've had all sorts of great players that have never won a World Series. I mean, Tony Gwynn played for 20 years, and yes, he made it to 2 World Series, but he went to 3 total postseason appearances. Ichiro never made it as far as the World Series, only made it to an ALCS. He had 2 total trips to the postseason in his career. Like, you have all sorts of all-time great players that don't win a World Series. Is that the bottom line? He has to win the World Series or it's a wasted career?
I think it's more the emphasis, because here's the thing.
Because they've had success and gotten to the postseason all over the place since Jose's been here. Ken, so it's got to be World Series, right?
Ken was getting a lot of flack on social media, so later in the show he came back and said, I was making a point about baseball in general. That's not what he said in the first segment. So I'm just going to rip the Band-Aid off and say that it was a very convenient, polished job at the 7:20 segment today, as opposed to what he actually said in the 6 o'clock segment. So I have to offer that bit of honesty.
All right, so what's the difference here? Lay it out from your perspective then, because I'm curious to know. What was the difference in the first time and then in the second
time? The first time he laid it at the feet of the Guardians. He said, you're going to go out there and you're going to hit Nolan Jones in the 2 spot and act like you're trying to win with Jose. And my response would be, because everybody focuses on, like, they got to show you they're trying to win the World Series. They traded for Lane Thomas last year. They signed Matthew Boyd. There's another sign. Oh, they traded for Alex Cobb. You might not like those 3 moves. They made 3 moves. But by the way, both Lane Thomas and Matthew Boyd came up big on your journey to the ALCS. I guess here's the problem, though. People are saying this in the 2010s. After they signed Edwin Encarnacion and they had a league average payroll.
To me, it's
just like low hanging fruit. Even if the last 4 years, they certainly have not done everything they can financially to put a team around Jose.
I felt like 2017 and that season that you're talking about with Encarnacion in particular, I thought they got a lot of credit for that. I thought they, and it was the biggest time we've seen them in really in the past 10 years, like actually make a push forward though.
I think that might be revisionist history. That's not how I or maybe it's just not how I remember it. It was okay. You did that
because
I mean,
you won 100. You won 102 games, and then obviously you bowed out in the first round.
But then it became. I think people you didn't win a playoff series after 2016.
For sure, but I think people wanted you to build on that, though. But I think 2017, after the World Series in 2016, I think people did give him credit and say, okay, you are adding pieces, you are making the moves. The problem that happened is it just stopped right there.
Well, yeah, because everybody started getting more expensive. Then about trying to retain the team that you had.
Right, but I do feel like they did get credit for that one season, and then I think people. And they were wrong, obviously. But I think people then set new expectations that would be the gold standard, and it just didn't turn out to be that.
I also think people talked about Edwin Encarnacion like he was an abject failure here, and he was super productive when he was here, just the same as he was. He just wasn't Mike Trout in his prime. And I guess, like, I actually think it's legitimate you can say, since they signed Jose, really since COVID, the financial support for this team has gone in the tank. I think that's a totally fair conversation to have.
Yeah.
If you compare it to the financial support of the team from 2013 when Tito first got here to like 2019. At the same point, then we go, all right, well, they're not spending as much. What are the results? The results are, two of the last 3 years, you were one pitch away from the ALCS in 2022, and last year you were in the ALCS. And you made moves during the season, which you didn't do in 2022. You made moves that got you closer in the playoffs that paid off in Lane Thomas and in Matthew Boyd. So, like, I guess my thing is, like,
yeah, they weren't the most decorated moves, though. You called him Lemon Law Lane for 2 months.
Yeah, well, and then he made up for it in the playoffs.
And he did. And Matthew Boyd, he's just a old southpaw, and he came up big in the postseason, but it's not like there was some big push. What were the sexy players out there?
What were the sexier players that got traded?
I know, but I don't want to rewrite this as if we're acting as if just because they made moves, they were substantial moves, and the fan base was like, way to go, way to do it.
They made moves, and the moves paid off. Like, shouldn't you get credit for trading for a former All-Star outfielder and a good middle-of-the-road pitcher? I wasn't going to go too hard. I was going to glaze Matthew Boyd that much.
Max laughing for a reason. He's laughing for a reason.
Well, but like, I think my point is, like, so I can say the four-year thing. Like, this, Jose Ramirez isn't going to be the cautionary tale of, oh, what you could have done with him. Because I think you can say that more about Aaron Judge and the Yankees, who have no limitations, who have stood pat or made sideways moves at the deadline. You can damn sure say it for Mike Trout, who will be a generational cautionary tale. Will there be some big agents who use Jose taking a hometown discount and then the team not putting the rest of that money around him? Yes, because it's baseball. And those guys will weaponize anything in the war of players versus owners. But in terms of the big picture, you're not wasting anything. There's nothing being wasted with Jose Ramirez. He's having a Hall of Fame career,
right.
And you're winning in a huge part because you re-signed him.
Wasting makes it sound like the past 10 years were all a failure. And that's the only problem I had with it all. Like, yeah, listen, I am not shy to going to town and just taking a...
Easy
now. But taking a bat and swinging it like it's a pinata at... you're just not going to let me do any of it today.
Show me your tricks, big boy.
I'm just saying. Getting very Randy over there.
It's not Randy.
You're somebody's father, and I appreciate that about you.
But I've taken the Dolphins to task often on this station. So I'm not shy to do that. But that would make it seem as if the previous 10 years have all just been some big failure, and it's just not.
And they've had success. And I think Lima even pointed out, like, well,
that's
since 2013.
They've had success, a bunch of success.
Well, and so I think, okay, so I can meet anyone halfway that I would love it if we could spend another $40 million a year. Now, I don't want to spend it on Anthony Santander. I don't want to spend it there. I don't want to spend it on some middle-of-the-road outfielder who's going to hit 25 home runs here, and then in L.A. he'll hit 35 like Teoscar Hernandez. Nope, if there was another quality player available, I would love if they could sign him or keep a guy like Kwan. I do. But you have to look at what's happening in Pittsburgh. You have to look at what's happening in Cincinnati. You have to look at comparable markets and how they're not having the kind of success you are. Like, you're much closer to the Brewers and the Rays, and those guys don't have a Hosey. That Brewers might with Chorio.
Yeah.
But and Yelich has had a couple years, but he's also had some years where they paid him $30 million to do diddly squat. So I continue to look back on this, and I'm like, I understand some of the argument here. But it is wildly dramatic and honestly, I think unfair.
I thought you going to tell us what happened to the Rays superstar.
To say it's Yandy Diaz. And what happened was performance enhancing.
Yeah, you keep driving by that Wander Franco line. Okay.
It's, I mean, he was no Jose Ramirez. Is Jose Ramirez, but we keep coming back to, is Jose Ramirez on track to be a cautionary tale? No, the team's having success more often than not, and the player continues to have success.
Yeah, a cautionary tale is if, let's say, the Pirates keep going down their track with Paul Skeens, and then they somehow in some magical way are able to re-sign Skeens at a discount because, I don't know, Livy Dunn just loves Pittsburgh for some reason.
She seems like she does.
And they just continue to run out the same team that Pittsburgh's been running out and the same team that's going to get Charrington fired and everything. That would be a cautionary tale.
Yeah.
That would be a, how did you screw this up and why did you do it this way? And you're letting everyone in baseball down. What the Guardians have done is not that.
And the Pirates, don't have a pitching factory. They don't have a player development system like the Guardians do. That's where the Guardians spend their money. I would prefer they spent money there and by retaining the right free agents or adding the select free agent here and there. But if we start getting to cautionary tales in baseball, Jose in top five. He's not, I mean,
no, and again, baseball is littered with all sorts of great players. If the standard is just you have to win a World Series and that's the only way your career is a success, we got a bunch of great players that never won a World Series.
And I'll be honest with you, Mark Shapiro is a cautionary tale of spending money in the wrong way with George Springer. And there's six or seven other guys they've just thrown money at more than they should because they got to pay somebody and it ain't happening. 216-474-0092. Is Jose Ramirez on track to be a cautionary tale around baseball? Zach Jackson, Browns and NFL reporter for The Athletic. Coming up, we'll talk Shador reps year over year. We'll also get into the Browns quarterback situation year over year in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan. Zach Jackson, Browns and NFL writer for The Athletic and host of the Zach Jackson and Friends podcast. You can check everywhere. You get your podcast. Zach now appears on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Zach, welcome to the show.
Hi, guys.
Hi, how you doing, bud?
Hey, Zach.
Good. Hey, Jonathan, when you spent all of March screaming about Shador being a top five pick, did you mean top five picks or top five rounds? I just wanted to clear that up.
It was rounds. The radio's a little muffled sometimes, Zach, okay. So it doesn't always come through. That's, good thing we are on the FM dial, so I really don't have any excuses
This is why you got to say it with your chest. Say it with conviction.
That's right.
I just hadn't been able to catch up with you, so I just wanted to clear that up. So we're onward and upward. You know,
well,
we're
actually,
into OTA season. So.
We should continue the conversation with where you sat then most recently with Shador, where you had very kind things to say about his performances.
He's a very talented thrower of the football. I mean, it's obvious. So what do you learn in rookie minicamp? Not a lot. What really of consequence comes from day one or day two, I guess, of OTAs, day one we get to watch? Probably next to nothing. But when you just watch him on a practice field, he's a very gifted thrower of the football. Just, you know, accuracy, timing, things like that. So if he can put it all together, then I really believe that he has a chance. But I don't think we should jump to conclusions anyway at this point. We want to, right? And today there was a lot of excitement, and there will be next Wednesday, I think, is the day that we're out there. But it really is the infant stages. This is like getting excited about the second day of spring training, you know, when there's 162 ahead. So it doesn't, you know, the Browns don't play 162. Some years it feels like they do, last year being one of them. But this is the story, right, of the Browns, the quarterback competition. This is one of the stories of the NFL, and Shador is a part of that. And I think at some point, not this September, to be very clear, but I think at some point this kid has a chance to be an NFL quarterback. I really do.
So I'm glad you asked that because there's a way of looking at Shador specific to the quarterback kerfuffle that will go on this summer as maybe the odd man out in terms of having the least chance to maybe claim the job. Do you think he has a legitimate chance to win the job, or is that a far-fetched idea?
He has almost zero chance to win the job as far as September. And that's what we're talking about right now, right? To win this job for this competition. He's going to get the fewest reps. He's going to start last in line. And neither of the rookies have any chance to win this job. This is Joe Flacco or Kenny Pickett's job, barring something else. Now, this is the Cleveland Browns, so anything is in play, any avenue. And I mean that, and not just to get a chuckle, right? But Kenny Pickett and Joe Flacco are going to continue to be one and two, and today they were one and then two and then one again, right? Joe Flacco's 18 years of NFL experience and Kenny Pickett's 35 starts and 3 years and playing on a Super Bowl team, playing in a playoff game, that puts them light years ahead of those guys. And so, you know, talking about the other guys, where they are now, they are not in the picture. And to me, there's just very little chance that they could realistically be in the picture. Now, will August be huge for both of those guys in terms of the here and now and their potentials of having real careers? Yes, but, you know, it's a four-way quarterback competition, but there is a smaller than 4% chance that either rookie could realistically be the starter in September when they play the Bengals.
Did you like Joe Flacco's comments today? I know he said something similar even just a couple years ago, but talking about how he's not going to be a mentor, but he is, you know, hoping that just being around will be all he needs to do in order to get some of these young guys up to speed.
Yeah, Joe's so good at this, and he's unique at this part of it too. He gives really great quotes with really great football insight. Doesn't try to be a storyteller. Doesn't try to be a joke teller. Doesn't try to add more than it is. When he speaks from a place of a guy who's seen a lot in this league, right? Who's kind of done it all. He was a Super Bowl MVP, right? I remember standing in the tunnel in that stadium watching Joe Flacco walk out after losing to Baker Mayfield and kind of knowing it was over with the Ravens. And 2 weeks later it was, right? Like he's done it all. I mean, the Browns called him off the couch. He was thrown in the park with his brother, you know? Mm-hmm. So yeah, like he's a gem. And I was initially shocked that it ended up being the reunion, but as I processed that over the last however many weeks, and gosh, since the draft, it feels more like 4 months than 4 weeks. But I think they did right. I think he will win the job. I think he's the best man for the job right now. But even if he doesn't, or even if it goes a number of different ways, I think the Browns made themselves better and gave themselves a chance to make Dylan and Shador better just by having Joe Flacco around.
So with all this, if we think back to the decision to not bring him back, and you know, it's his first voyage, and now this offseason, and trading for Kenny first and then signing Joe, do you think that Kevin Stefanski prefers Kenny Pickett to Joe Flacco, or do you think maybe he views them in comparable terms?
I think he views them in comparable terms. I don't think that anybody but Kevin could answer that question for himself, Nick. When it comes to the order, that is the order that things would go in. If the Eagles were willing to trade Kenny Pickett, then that would be an early March move. And Joe Flacco, at this stage of his career, clearly no team deemed him as their clear number one opening day starter, so he wasn't going to sign until late March or early April. You know, and this year it happened that there was a little bit of a stare down and traffic jam that involved Russell Wilson and Jameis Winston and Kirk Cousins on various levels. And so he signed a week before the draft or whenever exactly that was. You know, so I wouldn't put really anything into the order there. You know, had they drafted a quarterback at number two or number five overall, there would be an order, right? Did they have a realistic guy coming back that had started X amount of games and had X amount of success, there would be an order. But right now, I think it's the two older guys and the two younger guys. You know, Pickett's a little bit older than most guys entering the fourth year. Gabriel's a little bit older than most rookies. But, you know, I think it's the two guys who have played in the NFL and the two guys who haven't. I think they're all close in their own way. And as boring as it is, like I think for the most part, Kevin is telling us the truth when he says he's not going to worry about order and reps and any kind of pecking order until he has to. And when he has to me, isn't until the first week of August.
Do you feel like if it's like a tie goes to the runner situation, Flacco and Pickett, let's just say they're in a dead heat by the time he has to make the decision, do you feel like he'd go with Pickett just because league-wide, I think you get so much more if Pickett ends up being a much better player, plus you have a long-term, a lot to gain that way as well?
No, I don't necessarily agree with that line of thinking. Kenny Pickett's only under contract for 1 year, right? And if he plays great and wins you a bunch of games, you have to pay him, you know? So I don't know.
I meant more like the reclamation project that he would be. I feel like it'd almost be like Kevin O'Connor, with Sam Darnold, whereas with Joe Flacco, we already did that 2 years ago.
Yeah, but you just said it. I mean, Sam Darnold played his way into $40 million, even if he lost 15 of that, you know, in his last two games. So, I mean, the Browns have major salary cap issues. Sean Watson's cap number for next year is $80 million. So, you know, that doesn't have anything to do with right now, but it has everything to do with going forward. I don't I think Joe Flacco's flat out better. I think visually he's better. I think experience-wise shows he's better. If Kenny Pickett earns the job, it's because he's going to way outplay him and get the locker room in the huddle behind him, and that might happen. I'll be surprised if that happens. And maybe there is some sort of thought that they want Kenny Pickett. But, I mean, like I said, if Kenny Pickett was on his rookie contract for three more years, it would be completely different. He's not. He is a dirt-cheap option by quarterback standards, just like Joe Flacco is. And the difference is their 15 years of experience. That's what that is. I mean, I like I said, I think, and I think most people think, that Flacco is better. But we will see how this goes, because Kenny's getting a start. And I do I understand why you ask that, because I do think there is the thought behind getting him there, giving him this chance, is that there could be that kind of revival. But he's only under the contract for the Browns for the next 17 games.
Zach, looking to Myles Garrett, one of the big commentaries from the Browns post the $40 million extension and the trade kerfuffle and all that kind of stuff was, we want Myles to raise his level of leadership and raise all that, right? And then today, on the day where Browns media is going to be talking with the team at OTAs, we got an Instagram of Myles letting everyone know he's in Japan. Is that a coincidence, you think?
I would say that OTAs are almost completely inconsequential to Myles Garrett, and that him not being there would be no surprise to the rest of us. And I would let you guys spend the other hours talking about that, because that's what I would say. Like, I'm not going to take a stance. Did I slightly raise an eyebrow? That given the circumstances of the last 4 months that he wasn't there, yes. But was I 1% surprised? No.
Zach, tell me your other observations from OTAs today, and I want to leave it very open-ended, because I want to just find out and pick your brain as to what exactly you saw and what exactly you were impressed with, and that might just be someone showing up in shape or anything that caught your eye.
I mean, DeJuan Jones looks like a different guy. He's lost a lot of weight, and I think more importantly, him being out there for what looks like a full practice load is positive, because I think that there was a thought that he wouldn't be ready till training camp. So there's that, and there was one really good throw from Flacco to Jerry Jeudy that it was like, well, Flacco can still do that. And Jerry Jeudy, as we saw last year, when he gets NFL-level quarterback play, can be an explosive playmaker. There's just not a lot else to see, Jonathan. You know, I'm going to write more than that for tomorrow. But we're talking about an early practice with a lot going on, more than normal, because they're running simultaneous practice fields to get everybody their reps. I think everybody that was on Twitter saw the ball get batted back into Dillon Gabriel's face. He is tiny. That does happen to quarterbacks who are a foot taller than him. You know, it's day two. It's week one. It's part of it. If you want to track every stat, I don't blame you. There was one impressive throw, right, from Flacco that stood out. I thought Shador made some impressive throws in 7-on-7. I want to see more. Like, I am not going to give a real impression on any of the quarterbacks, no more than I already have anyway, right, just talking through it, until we see in 2 weeks, because they need time to acclimate. I mean, think about it. They had rookie minicamp, and then Dillon and Shador joined the pro. That was only 2 weeks ago yesterday. That was their first day even being in the offseason program, even being here and meeting these guys and sitting in a meeting and diving past the first page of the playbook. So, like, what are they really getting out of it now? You know, always Kevin Stefanski's OTAs have been holding the rookies back, letting them learn. And every team's OTAs are getting through minicamp and then deciding which rookies are coming along, which aren't, which are close, which aren't close, and what do we have to do in different positions. So it's different this year because the quarterback search went the way that it did, and because Shador Sanders is here. But on OTA 2, it's really not a lot different. And anybody who wants to make more of today than what it was is just getting way ahead of themselves. Like, trust me, guys, there'll be times for that in August, and I'll be tweeting the stats just like everybody else.
Zach Jackson on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline of The Athletic and Zach Jackson and Friends podcast. I know we talked a lot of Browns to this point, but just kind of on a lark here. No specific reason I'm asking this question. How do you feel about charging admission to youth baseball games?
Nick, if we had 5 hours, then I would like to take off on that. We don't. So I'm going to just say that I don't like it. And but right now, to go full football coach cliche, you know, my focus is getting on next week and seeing these OTAs.
I didn't know if we were going to have to dump you because I heard what you said on the podcast.
I'm lost. Zach, what did you? How much did you get charged?
Well, there's one scumbag in particular who charges $10. but, you know, he'll do it at a place. It's not at a nice place. He'll do it at a city park where the bathrooms are closed and there's no concession stand and there's no trainer around and there's no scoreboard and no anything. And it's frankly a crime.
That's awful.
Yeah.
For a youth baseball game, $10. I know the travel games, people have gotten really expensive with those. But just in general, I can't imagine paying. I can get cheaper Guardians tickets.
And in fairness, and I'd say this with all love to our youth who's just learning to play the game. It's not Major League Baseball. It's not the quality that you would want from that setting.
Yeah, the one I'm referencing in particular is a park that had five fields going on a Friday night, and two of the five were 10U games. So these kids haven't finished elementary school. But grandma and grandpa are getting charged $10 to come watch them try to hit the ball past shortstop. Like, come on, what are we doing here?
See?
That's all.
I knew it'd be box office. Zach, given where the Browns are and where they're potentially going, would it be a disappointment if the Browns don't get the number one pick next year?
It's way too early for that discussion, and I would say that I don't believe at all they're going to be the worst team in the league. I believe a really bad season is in the realm of outcomes, Nick, but you know, I'm not convinced that they're going to be a bottom tier team. I'm fairly convinced they're not going to be an upper tier team. But when you think about all the things that went wrong last year and how historically inept the offense was both at the beginning of the year and at the end of the year, like, I just think that mild improvement in running the ball and Joe Flacco, even if he only starts six games for reasons of injury, tanking, performance, whatever, like, he couldn't help but be better than what they're putting out there. Right. So I'm interested. I think, even though it went in a weird order, I think they drafted some good players. You know, I think there's not enough young guys in the pipeline who I think are ascending, but there are some. And if they get good offensive line play and just efficient Stefanski offense, like, why couldn't they be competitive like they were last November and not, you know, for at least more time than that? So, you know, I picked them to be in fourth place. I do think number one pick is within the range of outcomes, but I don't think it's likely. And I don't think at all that this is a bottom five team talent-wise. I don't think at all. So we'll see what they do, what they get out of quarterback, and we'll see how healthy they stay. And, you know, that goes in with like 10 other layers of luck that come in this league. But, I would not think right now, like, if we're having this discussion around Thanksgiving, certainly seems like we could, but I don't know that at all that it's headed that way. And I certainly don't think the coaching staff has any plans on tanking for anything. I think they're going to put the best quarterback out there that they believe gives them a chance to win games, and then we'll judge if they're really right about that thought or not.
Zach, great stuff as always, man. Appreciate you, and look forward to reading your write-up on OTAs.
Thanks, Zach.
Thanks, guys.
Zach Jackson there, the Athletic on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. It gave us plenty to react to on the Browns day one there of OTAs, or day one of media availability with OTAs. We'll react to that in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan. I wish I would have heard the barring something else in there when we were listening to Zach, because I would have loved to know what the barring something else is.
I mean, is it just accounting for injuries or something? Is that what that is?
My initial thought when I first heard it was Jimmy.
Okay.
And there's no way Jimmy's going to do that to Stefanski, right? He has to know if Stefanski thinks Flacco or Pickett's the right guy. Week one, there's no way Jimmy comes down and just like play Shador or Dylan Gabriel.
I don't know why he would have an incentive to do so, only because Shador or Dylan Gabriel are best served later on in the season. They're not best served right away. You know, like if you're for like Jimmy's purposes, they're best served around, you know, week seven, week eight, week nine, and then you drum up interest. You have intrigue around the quarterback battle and the competition, and then you put him out there. But this schedule is so hard in the beginning. I feel like either rookie is just tossed to the – you're thrown to the wolves if you get to start here.
Unless that's part of Jimmy's plan. Unless Jimmy has secret ideations about tanking, which, again, would probably mean he's already made the decision to fire Stefanski, if not Stefanski and Perry.
Okay.
I'm just thinking, like, What else could that be?
Yeah, I mean, what I like about Zach and bringing Zach on, though, is Zach just shoots it as straight as he possibly can. And what I find interesting out of it was that he seems to think that Joe has the, not only the upper hand, but just looks significantly better than Kenny Pickett in this battle right now and is in line to win the starting job.
Of all the, if we go flat, let's go the first three quarterbacks. Let's put Shador off to the side for a few reasons.
Sure.
Because his popularity is skewed in a different way. Flacco, Pickett, Dylan Gabriel. We all agree Flacco's the one that will make people the most happy, right?
Out of those three, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, I think okay. So. Yeah.
Now Shador's different because he's got what do we call him? Shapologists on TikTok.
I think you call him that. I don't know that.
I think a lot of people are calling them the Shapologists. Many people are.
I think you came up with that.
Many people.
Many people.
I actually think, we probably should have just asked Zach in that moment, but it was kind of almost a pause in the midst of a greater point that he was making. I also think, how Zach talked about the rookies is exactly how we should talk about the rookies in OTAs. For either guy to have a serious chance at winning this job, now is not the time where that happens. The right. time where it happens is if you show up at camp and you look like you've been working on everything, or if you look like a much more polished quarterback with 2 months in the building.
If you look like you're actually learning and you're getting better and everything, yeah, I mean, that's what it should be. I thought his point about Flacco, between the difference between Flacco and Pickett and how it relates to Stefanski was really interesting. We touched on that for a second. Like, just the idea that I've lived with the assumption that you'll get so much more credit if you make Kenny Pickett into a good to great quarterback. But he makes a decent point. Like, you do have to pay him at the end of the season. But if you make Flacco into a good to great quarterback for a whole season, what are we doing? You're going to run it back with old Joe Flacco? Like, how does that end?
You'll have no choice. I shouldn't say you'll have no choice. One, you will have two first rounders. And the other thing is, you just never know what quarterbacks might shake free. Now, I'm suggesting a bridge to another bridge. But that if you start Joe Flacco and he... Because I honestly, this is how I think. If Joe Flacco starts, I think you're going to have a better than anticipated start to the season. And then I think somewhere in there, the Flacco-ness of it will catch up with you because he is 40 and because he is interception prone.
Just how it happens.
And then,
you're at least giving the credit of the better start than most people think. I think it's going to be not a disaster right away, but I legitimately think you can go 0-4, 0-5.
So this is a beauty in the eye of the beholder here. I think the danger of playing Joe is I think you're going to win too many games to fall back on having the number one pick next year or top three pick, which means you're going to have to trade to get up, and that's a huge price. Now, the other way I can say that is Joe gives you a chance at the beginning of the season to at least see if this team has anything. So that's just depending on how you look at it. I tend to believe Joe's going to win too many games, and I think there is a moment in the middle of the season where the ass falls out of it. But I can at least understand if Kevin's thinking job preservation, I got to get these guys ready and I got to try and win and I got to keep that locker room or I got to get that locker room back.
He's got to do everything he can to try to win.
It is Joe Flacco.
And listen, I mean, Zach's there. Zach sees it. And it's not shocking to me that Joe Flacco looks better than Kenny Pickett right now. That should be the expectation. Like, this is almost where I tell Stefanski to go earn his money. Like, if you really think you can do this, make it where Kenny Pickett looks better than 40-year-old Joe Flacco at this point.
And so I actually think that point, I had asked, you know, Zach, is there, and I'm in fairness, I'm putting together a lot of clues that might not be there, right? This might be a Rorschach test, and it's just a bunch of blots on a piece of paper, and I'm going to say it's a seahorse, right? The way I think the way that Kevin talks about Kenny is different than the way that he talks about Joe Flacco. And if a year ago, if Kevin Stefanski wanted Joe Flacco back, Joe would have been back. And I don't know if it was because the interceptions, and Kevin really didn't like interceptions as a quarterback. The Deshaun thing, do I think that was for the front office? Do I think that was for the Haslams? Yes. I'm telling you right now, if Kevin had gone into if he had gone into Haslam or Andrew Berry's office and said, we need Joe back next year so we have a chance in case Deshaun falters, Joe would have been back last year. You can't convince me otherwise.
I mean, I just think they did everything to try to make Deshaun as comfortable as possible, which we can all find the humor attached to that. But, like, I... don't know. I mean, that playoff game, it wasn't like it was great. It was spiraling. It was. For Joe, it was spiraling. That's what makes it so fascinating that he is back in the building.
And that's why I really do think, if Kevin were being honest, in a moment of honesty, I think he likes Kenny Pickett more than he likes Joe Flacco. Whether it's the stylistic differences.
I think he loves what he thinks he can do with Kenny Pickett. And that, I think, is the part that Zach's hinted on that it has yet to be proven, obviously.
This is an incredibly rudimentary take. This is boiling it all the way down as far as you can distill it. Joe is a turnover machine. Kenny Pickett, the one thing he doesn't do or has not done historically in his career is turn the ball over.
What's he, 15 touchdowns of 14 picks in his career?
I think it's
something like that.
The touchdowns are low. The interceptions are not high. His interception percentage for his career was under two.
I wasn't saying that like it was a bad thing. I was just pointing it out.
Oh, okay, because the lack of touchdowns is a real problem.
Well, yeah.
And he didn't have George Pickens crazy ass here.
We played him long. That's the point, though, is he played so many games and he didn't have too many touchdowns.
The lead coming up in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.